my approach has always been, how can I make it better? And it may be one tiny step, but anything that can make it better.
That's Dr. Vishal Sarwahi, a pioneer in the field of pediatric scoliosis surgery.
For me, scoliosis is my passion. This is what I live and eat and breathe every day, essentially. So I listen to my patients. I talk to them. Years ago, I had two kids who came to me with scoliosis who already had history of opioid misuse. And around this time, we all know opioid epidemic was becoming a major problem. Of course, parents were concerned.
This presented a dilemma. Orthopedic surgeries like scoliosis correction are painful procedures, and patients receive large amounts of opioids to help them recover. Often, they leave the hospital with 15 days to 3 weeks of the highly potent, highly addictive painkillers. Listening to these concerned parents, he knew he had to find another way.
If you connect with your patient, they teach you. You learn a lot from them.
And what he learned from these two cases inspired a major advance in scoliosis surgery, one that has led to not only less invasive techniques and faster recovery times, but an astonishing 80% decrease in the amount of opioids given to kids during and after surgery. Hello, and welcome to 20 Minute Health Talk. I'm Sandra Lindsay. For today's episode, we sat down with Dr. Sarwahi to learn about his pioneering efforts to reduce reliance on opioids in pediatric scoliosis surgery, as well as the technical advances he has brought to the operating room that are making it possible, something he calls the Rapid Recovery Protocol. Dr. Sarwahi is director of Northwell Health's Center for Minimally Invasive Scoliosis Surgery and the Center for Advanced Pediatric Orthopedics at Cohen Children's Medical Center. Studies show that patients who are given opioids for surgery are at a higher risk of opioid misuse later in life. Even more troubling, it takes just 5 days to develop an addiction to this class of drugs, which include prescription painkillers like OxyContin and Vicodin, some of the strongest on the planet. While dangerous, opioids are a necessary part of surgery, particularly major orthopedic operations like those done to treat severe scoliosis, which Dr. Sarwahi performs daily.
First and foremost, it is a very safe surgery and a very successful surgery, especially in teenage years. So I would put it almost 99% safe, 99% successful. What is routinely or what commonly is now being done, we are putting screws. Yeah, you heard it correctly. It's screws. And we put rods in the spine. So we're putting screws slightly smaller than my pinky finger. So two screws at each bone. Not the whole spine is fused, obviously. We only usually fix the curve. And then we put in a rod, left side rod and right side rod. The rods, imagine the screws are like anchors, and the rods are the ones which basically straighten the spine out. I do a lot of these, so I take about 2.5-3 hours. But on average, people take about 5-6 hours.
30% of those diagnosed with scoliosis need treatment. Just 10% need surgery.
So scoliosis is a curve of your spine. It's not just a curve, it's also a twist. The twisting is very important. And it happens mostly in teenage years, around the time when they go through puberty and they grow a lot. That's when the back starts curving and twisting. Unfortunately, it's more frequently in girls.
And that twist causes another problem.
And when the whole body twists, the ribs stick out in the back, what is called as a rib hump. And that's how most pediatricians and patients will notice the ribs are malformed or deformed.
Something that Dr. Sarwahi said is most often caught between ages 10 and 15 when children hit a growth spurt.
It is obvious. You look at their back, you will see it. Especially if they have tight clothes on or if they're in their swimsuits, you will see it. If you look at the back and see something sticking out, one shoulder blade is sticking out, or one shoulder is slightly higher than the other, hips are asymmetric, bring them to the doctor.
Left untreated, any case that would require surgery, meaning a curve of more than 40 or 50 degrees, will continue to increase 1 or 2 degrees every year for the rest of your life. Dr. Sarwahi explained.
If I'm 20 years of age and I have a 50-degree curve, in 20 years, that curve can be anywhere from 70 to 90 degrees. Now, that's a big curve. Can we fix it at that age? Sure enough, we can. But at 20 years of age, it is a 99% safe, 99% successful surgery. Same surgery at 40 years of age is only 70% successful. Not just that, it's a big curve, so you will get less correction. Not just that, that curve is big enough that it's going to push on your lungs and compromise the lungs. So your breathing goes down a bit, your lung functions get compromised, and the fear is that it will start affecting your heart. It usually will not kill you, but it will definitely compromise the quality of your life. There are some studies actually coming out of Italy on untreated scoliosis where there is about 20% mortality because of heart and lung problems later on at that age. So obviously you don't want to be there. The best thing is to get it fixed.
Correcting this rib hump, Dr. Sarwahi told us, could require shaving down the rib or even breaking and removing one or several to return the body to a normal shape.
And that hurts. You know, cracked ribs hurt.
With such a major surgery, controlling pain is critical to a patient's recovery.
Opioids are crucial, especially for bad pain. Not your routine ankle sprain. This is surgical pain. This is painful. If I'm cracking your ribs, if I'm cutting your bone, it is painful. I won't lie that to you. That's the first thing that these teenagers are concerned about is pain, essentially. Pain delays recovery. Pain can become chronic if you don't treat it properly. So for the rest of their life, they'll be experiencing pain. But opioids, given at the right dose, for the right duration, can manage it safely. Problem is, as we all know, they're addictive.
Opioid addiction affects all ages and communities and has contributed to drug overdoses becoming one of the leading causes of unintentional death in the U.S. Tragically, the risk to kids is only getting worse. The CDC reported a 94% spike in overdose deaths among kids 14 to 18 years old from 2019 to 2020. That number increased 20% from 2020 to 2021. About 90% of those deaths involved opioids. According to the CDC's State Unintentional Drug Overdose Reporting System, a major factor driving this trend has been the widespread availability of fentanyl, which is 50 to 100 times stronger than heroin.
The United States has lost more people to the opioid epidemic. And this is not just prescription, combined, everything, fentanyl and everything, illegal and everything, than in the entire World War II. I mean, to me, that is a gut-wrenching fact.
This problem started, Dr. Sarwahi said, when the idea became getting pain down to zero.
Pain was considered the most important thing in terms of recovery, not just surgery, anything, sprain, even getting a wisdom tooth removed, essentially. So trying to avoid pain became, at that time, the most important directive, not just from patients or parents, but also from the government and the CDC. Everybody was talking, FDA was talking about pain, managing pain. And I think we ran away with it for quite some time and with the right intention.
Unfortunately, this problem continues today.
In general, the standard all over the country is lots of opioids. They do give this thing called the PCA, which is patient-controlled analgesia. So we attach you to an IV line with a pump, which keeps pumping a basal rate, a fixed constant rate every hour for 2 days in the hospital for 5 to 7 days on an average. And they would go home with 15 days to 3 weeks of oxy and other opioids. The problem with all that is when you get too much of morphine, the pain never goes down to zero. But then once we started realizing that, you know, there are problems and people are getting very addicted very quickly and very early, people start asking questions that there must be Are we overdoing this? And slowly the change happened.
Around this time, two patients came to Dr. Sarwahi in need of scoliosis treatment. In each case, surgery would be called for. But there was a problem. Both had a history of opioid misuse, which the parents let him know, fearing what might happen if their child was given large amounts of opioids for surgery.
When these kids came to me, there was a comeback of duramorphine medicine.
Duramorph is a type of opioid given as an injection in the spine to control severe pain. For context, it is 10 times more potent than an epidural and has been routinely used in much smaller doses called microdoses during C-section deliveries. Reading about its use in other types of surgery, Dr. Sarwahi wondered if these two patients, and more broadly, all scoliosis surgery patients, could benefit.
Now, the beauty of Duramorph is that it's hydrophilic. It loves water, essentially. So it gets attracted towards anything that is watery. And CSF, that is a spinal fluid that we have, is watery. So it gets dispersed along the whole spine, top to bottom, essentially.
Because the medication remains within the cerebrospinal fluid for several hours, patients wouldn't need as high a dose to control pain from surgery. In 2018, Dr. Sarwahi presented the idea to his pain management team at Cohen Children's Medical Center, including the hospital's chief of anesthesia, Dr. Michelle Kars.
A lot of conversations. We put a team together along with Dr. Kars and the other pain management team of a physical therapist, social workers, nurses, that this is what we're going to do. And we said, this is a trial thing.
Dr. Sarwahi decided to begin a trial using Duramorph. He kept patient-controlled anesthesia on standby, but felt that the patients wouldn't need it. There was just one unknown.
The question came down to the dose. What would be the right dose? Obviously, the higher dose puts you at high risk of respiratory depression, so we did not want to go to a higher dose. In the pediatric surgery, they had tried 2 to 4 micrograms. We wanted to bring it down.
Dr. Sarwahi landed on 1.5 micrograms for his two patients. For scale, 1 microgram is equal to 1/1000th of a milligram. So for a 90-pound child, that would be 61 micrograms. By comparison, patients on PCA receive 25 to 50 milligrams of morphine IV per day.
I started with 2 cases, they did well. Then we started with 10. Then we reviewed it, then went to 50, we reviewed, and then pretty soon it became standard. So we slowly started putting that as a protocol. But initially there was resistance as with anything new. I'm like, no. It is a dose which is given at the right place because it primes your nervous system. And since then, we have never looked back, and I have now 500 kids who have been treated this way.
This approach was the first step in what Dr. Sarwahi calls the rapid recovery protocol.
So rapid recovery protocol started elsewhere. Other places started doing it maybe a year before we came up with this. We were initially hesitant because they still use PCA for about a day and a half. And to me, that was still 50 milligrams extra morphine. So we were hesitant in doing that. So we put together our own rapid recovery protocol, which is basically they go home in 3 days. So an hour after the surgery, they can start eating, which is not true for the PCA because they are nauseous. They cannot eat for almost a day or two. My kids can start eating an hour later. That means they can swallow pills. So I don't have to give them injectable morphine. And we depend a lot on Tylenol and Advil. Alongside, of course, we do have for 3 to 5 days some oxycodone, but mostly not much of injectable.
Compared to patients receiving PCA, those benefiting from the rapid recovery protocol received nearly one-tenth of the amount of morphine and were prescribed half the amount of oxycodone post-surgery, according to a 2021 paper Dr. Sarwahi published in the journal Spine.
One night in the ICU, second day they're sitting up, third day they're climbing stairs, usually ready to go home in 3 days. And when I send them home on 3 to 5 days of some oral pain medications.
The microdose does require surgeons to not only think differently about pain management, but to thoroughly prepare their patients on what to expect.
I always educate my patients. I tell them, hey, expect the pain to be around 3 to 4 on a scale of 0 to 10. A lot of time when you prepare them, kids are smart. They understand, they listen, and their expectations are accordingly fine-tuned, essentially. Well, we almost decreased the opioid consumption by 80%, and I'm very proud of it. It's a big, big thing, 80% less opioids and better pain control. The journey still continues, so this is not the end of the Duramorph. We are now looking at if there is a difference, and it actually there is, if the Duramorph is given before surgery by the anesthesiologist, before they go under anesthesia or before even I make an incision, versus if I give it at the end of the surgery. That 3-hour difference makes a huge difference in the amount of opioids. So if they get injection before the surgery, the nervous system is already primed. So they wake up much better and requiring less pain medication.
Since publishing these findings in 2021, he and his team continue to update this technique and explore new ways to improve the surgery.
Technology has evolved. Our technique has evolved. So in a classic scoliosis surgery, we open your back, you move your muscles away, and we have to expose the entire bone, essentially. And then we reattach it. But moving muscles, if anybody who has had a sprain of the ankle or the knee, and a major sprain, we'll attest to that, it's a very painful thing. Now imagine your whole back has been sprained. But the same surgery, I've been doing it in a less invasive manner. I don't strip your muscles the same way, so essentially I'm preserving your muscles. So I find the natural plane that exists between those muscles. So imagine, you know, if I keep my fingers next to each other, and I'm just separating those fingers out instead of chopping those fingers out. So I just separate those. Your muscles are still attached. I find the natural plane that exists. And through that plane, I put my screws. So obviously less painful, less blood loss, and faster recovery. In fact, the study that we published a few years ago, we found like almost 99% of them did not need a blood transfusion, which is compared to if 20 to 30% patients require blood transfusion is a major win. The downside is it does take a little bit longer, but you know, with experience, this should decrease also.
This minimally invasive approach started taking shape 10 years ago and also takes into account the scars left by surgery.
So scoliosis, it depends on the type of the curve. Sometimes you have two curves. You know, sometimes it can be your whole back. You know, but instead of now one long incision in the back, I'm getting away with 3 non-contiguous, so they're not connecting to each other. Incisions. If you have a swimsuit on, probably you will not notice a long incision. You just might notice a tinier incision. But it's not about the incision, right? It is more about pain and long-term benefits of it. So we realize that, you know, this approach has been in place for quite some time, and we just combined 2 plus 2 together, and we came to this.
The latest evolution to Dr. Sarwahi's approach aims to improve accuracy when placing screws during scoliosis surgery. And he is doing it using a combination of technique and technology, or TNT for short.
I've put almost 70,000 screws now. And you always worry that what is happening if by chance the screws are misplaced.
And with good reason. In typical scoliosis surgeries, screws are misplaced around 30% of the time. But when Dr. Sarwahi checked his work,
my accuracy rate, confirmed on CAT scan, is about 93%. Luckily, most of the screws are lying next to the muscles or ligaments, and they're not endangered. But you have to understand what the risks are. So, you know, I told you we put screws into the spine, and the screws actually go from the back of the spine to the middle of the spine to the front of the spine. The problem is that when you're putting the screws in, we are not looking, we are not seeing the front of the spine or the middle of the spine. We just see the back of the spine.
One wrong move, he says, and surgeons could damage the spinal cord, leading to paralysis or even vital organs like the heart and lungs, which could be deadly.
So you have to do this either under X-ray vision, which is fluoroscopy, lots of radiation, or just by feel. So technology has been evolving to try to help surgeons put screws in a much more safer manner. Now we have navigation technology that has been around for at least 10 years or so, where people are doing CAT scans before the surgery. And based on that, then you use navigation during the surgery. So think of it like navigation, your car navigation, right? I mean, you go home every day, you drive every day, you know the roads, but still you switch on your Google Maps because it may tell you the faster way of reaching there.
The problem with that, he told us, was you still didn't know if your screws were placed accurately because scans were taken before placing the screws, not after.
You're presuming that your screws are played, have been placed accurately.
He acquired an intraoperative CT scan machine called Aero and began taking scans during and after to confirm the placement of screws were accurate. But he found another downside.
When we started adapting this technology, my 2.5-3 hour surgery became a 4-5 hour surgery. And you may say, well, you know, it doesn't matter, but it does matter because longer surgery means more anesthesia for the patient, more chance of blood loss, more chance of infection. Why would I want it? And more pain. Why would I want that? So we came up with this thing called TNT, which is a short form for technique and technology. I know that I have the surgical technique of putting screws. I've been doing it all these years. I'm pretty facile with it. So I can put those screws. And as I start putting screws, there will be one or two areas which will be challenging. I can skip those. And I continue putting the remainder of the screws. And once I'm done, I bring in my CAT scan. It takes 2 minutes for the CAT scan to spin. I see all my previously placed screws. I adjust them if I need to. And those one or two that I've skipped, I can now use navigation. And pretty soon, I've been able to put it back to 2.5 hours and with better accuracy now. So that approach, we call it TNT. It is as if, you know, we are putting combining all these things together and not only making surgery safer, but also more efficient and outcomes better.
Dr. Sarwahi is now studying the effectiveness of his TNT approach.
We are the only place in the country which is doing it. This technique gives me best of both worlds.
As we wrapped up our conversation, Dr. Sarwahi said parents and patients are thrilled to hear that opioids are not so heavily relied on.
Parents are asking for it. Kids have become smarter. They are also, you know, they are on board with this. But parents are demanding it equally.
While many continue to use PCA and prescribe opioids for surgical pain, he said he sees a positive trend of surgeons looking for ways to reduce their reliance on the dangerous painkillers.
Be a skeptic, not a naysayer. No, you should be a healthy skeptic. Not everything is absolutely correct and absolutely right in medicine. Sometimes things become a fad. But, you know, if there is enough evidence, parse the evidence, look for it, and talk to the guys who have done it, and they'll tell you. Because there are nuances to this. Not everything is as successfully reproducible everywhere. So, for example, the TNT approach, not everybody will be able to do it because you have to have that experience of putting screws in that way kind of thing. If you're not, I will say stick with the navigation because you don't want to harm. First, do no harm, right? But for the Duramorph, the opioid thing, that is not that difficult. If you are hesitant doing it, ask your anesthesiologist. They'll be able to help you. People are willing to help. You know, you have to seek collaboration. You know, education is constant. What you have learned 10 years ago probably is not going to be accurate today. It has to change. We have to change.
Reflecting on the many advances he's made to scoliosis surgery in the last decade, Dr. Sarwahi thought back to those two patients who started him down this path 10 years ago.
Had it not been for those two patients, I would still probably be practicing what others are doing. So, you know, my approach is I listen to my kids.
That does it for this episode. Thank you to our guest, Dr. Vishal Sarwahi, for sharing his inspirational story. On behalf of our podcast team, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Sandra Lindsay, and this has been another episode of 20 Minute Health Talk. Get more expert insight from the leading voices in healthcare today. You can subscribe to 20 Minute Health Talk wherever podcasts are available.